Thank you. Yeah, okay, that's good. Nobody introduced me, so. Yeah, so I've been making like this kind of like little political commentary, satirical game since 2003 or so. But yeah, today I'm gonna talk about procedural representation of sex in games. So I'm gonna try to be a little bit broader than other than talking just about my stuff. Now, I'm glad that you already made like a little point here. Let me just like reiterate this premise. Like sometimes I think there's a little bit of confusion when we talk about the subject of sex in games, especially in popular culture, mostly because games are still seen as technological objects, like, you know, made of technology. So everything that uses game-related technologies kind of ends up in the realm of gaming. For example, an example of game technology are immersive environments, right? So Second Life is often presented as a game, even though, you know, because it kind of looks like a game. That's a terrible picture, but it looks like a game. But in fact, it's more like a virtual community, you know, it's an online role-playing game, kind of like a sandbox. So, sure, there is a lot of sexual experimentation happening there, but I think essentially the sex happening in Second Life is not, it's just a more sophisticated version of the good old cyber sex via text. You know, and also the issues of role playing in online communities, gender bending, virtual BDSM, they have been studied a lot since at least the 90s. So that's not what I'm going to talk about today. Another kind of game technology that always often gets wrapped around or wrapped up with kind of like games and like especially in essentially it gets used in non-reproductive sex technology or like technologies of pleasures are the interfaces. So like video games have always been pioneering new forms of human-computer interaction, and so like, you know, looking for a richer experience and more interesting and new novel ways of controlling stuff on screen. So the result, not surprisingly, has been always like hacked into technologies of pleasure. That's not probably a good example, but that's an interesting story. But for example, like using the trans vibration as a sex doll, notorious case. And if you're not familiar with Rez, it's kind of like a very not sexualized kind of game. It's like a trippy musical shooter. Or for example, like hooking up game interfaces that connect with sex toys to control them, to enhance them, and not just connect, obviously. And then there's all the exploration of joystick as a phallic symbol, like the joy dick is kind of like a vibrator, dildo controller. Oh, you had the presentation. Yeah, it's kind of like recapping what probably happened in the last episodes. Or this one is actually a pretty good one. It's Road Fight, which you're just basically harnessing an old Atari joystick and trying to push the other person button. Yeah, it's a pretty good one. But anyway, however, formally speaking, a video game is not an assemblage of technologies, right? Games are... Video games are just kind of like the digital incarnation of a cultural form that has been around even like probably since even before history. Games are primarily like we say kind of systems of rules. They can be social interfaces, protocols for human to human interaction. They can be also expressive media. They can create representation through their own language. And more often than not, those representations are also questionable, like they are embracing and reinforcing the dominant system of values, and so on. So with this important distinction in mind, and kind of from the point of a game maker, game designer, I've been trying to figure out in what ways games and sex or sexuality intersect. And I came up with a tentative taxonomy. Let's see. So first thing, like probably the most immediate one is like, I guess, sex as reward. So that's when sexualized let's say erotic representations are there to reward the player when, for example, goals or certain goals are accomplished. And probably the most notorious example is this infamous Atari game called Custer's Revenge, which is a really kind of like a normal avoidance game. You're Custer and you are trying to not get hit by these arrows, and your goal is you know, like this Indian lady, probably. Who is she? I don't know if it has a historical thing. But, you know, they're basically kind of raping the native Indian. And, you know, it was at that point obviously controversial and stuff. But I would say that also in a more subtle way, even like in the Princess in Distress trope, like in Super Mario, you know, you have to save this kidnapped princess. I don't think we should assume that this is just, you know, chivalry. I think it's more likely that the working class hero, Mario Plummer, is kind of trying to climb his way up to aristocracy, you know? And it's still like there's probably sex involved, like maybe even a threesome. So it has been said that a lot of action games, like early arcade games, sort of cater to the appeal to the primal hunter and gatherer sort of wiring of our brains. Especially, you know, when you think about like all the games were about shooting, moving mazes, chasing, or accumulating items. People were saying, oh yeah, that's definitely like a very primal thing that games can stimulate or re-evoke. I would argue that probably the trope of sex as reward derives from something even more primal, from our distant primate past, which you have, you know, in patriarchal primate societies, hierarchy is strictly connected to the ability to reproduce. The alpha male generally is the one who gets to the first pick or like the broadest number of mates. And I think a lot of game structures somewhat resonate with the desire of conquering this alpha male status. A more abstract instance of, I think, sex as reward is represented by all these games, kind of like the erotic version of arcade games, so like digital strip poker, for example, kind of like sketchy bar kind of arcade thing. Or the serious Call Girls Panic. I don't even know if it was particularly popular here in the US. It kind of was in Italy. But anyway, this one I think creates, well, what you have to do is basically you're basically trying to discover this picture that lies beyond this kind of a layer of gaming thing. I think it creates a sort of interesting tension between gameplay and content, because they are like the kind of like the erotic image is completely disconnected from the gameplay, but also, you know, like you don't really have time to stare at the girl while you're playing, because you're so focused on this very mechanical arcade action. And so in this case, like the reward is also to some extent a distraction. So that's a possibility, something that happened. But I would say that dating sims, especially the hentai type of dating sims, those are, this is where probably sex as reward is present and implemented in the most direct way, because they are essentially puzzle-like gameplay, and the goal is generally to conquer, to seduce a virtual girl, most usually a girl. I haven't seen many on the other side. Dating sims are mostly produced and played in Japan, and the rest of the closest thing we have, I think, is the Leisure Suite Larry series that have been going on since the 80s. This is the first one. Which is way more tame, there's way more gameplay and way more humor. And but it's kind of like it's kind of the same. It's a graphic adventure. You have to solve certain puzzle, and the goal of the puzzle is to seduce this girl. You are kind of like a dorky, awkward, middle-aged guy. So more often than not, you're failing. In contrast, I would say like the subculture of hentai dating games can be like very extreme and very weird. You find like quite a lot of rape fantasy sort of themes, mild incest sometimes. This one is the most interesting I found. It's called Hypnosis Class, and your character has the power to hypnotize young girls and make them do headstands. And yeah, I didn't know about this fetish, but I can sort of see the appeal. You're like, why not? Not my thing, but you know. Anyway, in most of these games, dating and foreplay and sometimes even like intercourse are implemented as puzzles. So you have multiple choice generally, and you have to kind of say the right thing to impress the girl or the partner. And always some of these choices will lead to a positive outcome, that is, for example, consuming the sexual relationship. And I think it's kind of interesting that this genre is coming from a country where the dating culture seems to be broken. Not an expert in sociology in Japan, but definitely like there are a lot of reports that unmarried couples, people are on the rise, the population is declining, and strangely enough, the government is funding speed dating events and even like courses to teach personal relationships. So it's kind of strange to me. Well, not completely strange. Most of these games, the dating sims games, are actually coming from a subculture, a kind of like amateur game developer scene. So they're not really ways to capitalize on people's anxieties. But I do see them as probably as a manifestation of a broader discomfort. Games always reflect their context. Pretty much in the same way here, we have a lot of games that are about shooting Arabs, you know? And I guess they do have a kind of like a different series of issues and problems. But yeah, anyway, I'm not completely sure. I definitely don't think that this kind of dating game, this idea of seduction as a puzzle, contributes to a kind of a relaxed, unlimited view of personal relationships. Anyway, the second category is what I call sex as plot element, sex as plot device. It's relatively common in kind of story-based games and even in mainstream games. Obviously, sometimes this aspect overlaps with the sex as reward. You can see that as a plot element as well. But anyway, it can be a reward, for example, like it can be sex as a reward when reward for tolerating pretty bad voice acting and uncanny 3D puppets. That's from Dragon Age Origin. So, sex as plot element is not extremely interesting. Like, I refer to all the non-interactive, essentially, cutscene. It's not that, because it's mostly not, you're missing a kind of like Anya-like soundtrack that is a little bit fuzzy now, but that's fine. It's not that different from what you see in linear media, really. Like, you're not playing right now, you're just like spectating the scene. Like the sexual intercourse is there to establish certain relationships that are happening among certain characters. And in games when the intercourse is presented as a non-interactive cutscene, it kind of follows the same. It kind of follows the same conventions of Hollywood filmmaking. You have a elliptical montage, and you have this sweeping music. You have dim lighting, just to signal tastefulness, just to say like, hey, this is not porn. Often it happens with underwear on, sometimes with armor underwear, to kind of. Yeah, and you do go back to terrible dialogues, but yeah, instance it tries to dodge, full frontal nudity in order to, to avoid adult ratings. So as you can see, there's quite a lot of diversity, like for this women and women, and others always generally femme type, there are gay elves, the Mass Effect series pretty much explore all the recombination of a humanoid alien on human kind of sex. Yeah, but also like less attractive aliens that you can have a romance with. This is a very story-based game, kind of popular actually. But yeah, but... Yeah, if you can, like, okay. Actually, that light should... Oh, well. Oh, no, that was fine, actually. It's pretty good. Turn it off. the previous one. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, now it's dark. All right. But yeah, but we kind of seen this stuff already, you know. We've all seen Avatar, so it's not that new. I think things really get interesting when you have playable sex scenes, because to me they are more specific to the gaming language, so like new things are happening. And this one, this chapter of Heavy Rain is kind of like the threshold between the interactive scene and non-interactive scene. You have this cinematic dialogue, cinematic writing, and direction. This part is not interactive. And then something cheesy happens, and you switch to interaction. It's like, kiss, don't kiss, and you kiss. And it kind of goes on in this kind of like awkward foreplay that is technically called quick time action. I'm going to talk a little bit about later. It kind of, like, interestingly, like, there are some actions that are sort of crucial that you have to take them, and some other you can kind of wait forever, so you can be like suspended in this romantic state for unlimited amount of time. But yeah, but the quick action, as you see, for non-gamers might be a little absurd, because it basically tells you, all right, now you have to play exactly this game, this button, which is L1, which is the one on the top, right? And you have to press it in a very specific way. And yeah, if you're not a gamer, like, you always end up kind of looking at your controller and see like, oh my god, what was the X? Because unless you know, you are pretty good. But yeah, there is also kind of like non-noisy music here, but the modeling is actually pretty good. It's kind of like a little bit beyond Uncanny Valley. It's pretty good acting here. The game itself, you just need to know, is kind of like a combination of a lot of noir movies. Like, oh yeah, and then there's the final boss. You know it's coming. Yeah, unhooking the action to unhook the bra. Interestingly, if you don't unhook the bra, you have sex with the bra on. So, and then at this point it just goes on autopilot. You're not controlling it anymore, and then you have a couple of elliptical sequences, and then cuts to the post-coitum. And I think it's a pretty interesting choice that it goes autopilot, because yeah, well, it's, it has to be rated for a teenager. But yeah, but you can see her without pants in a second. But yeah, to me, like, it's actually a pretty good choice that you are interacting just at the very beginning of the foreplay, and then sex kind of goes like that. Because, she's not your partner yet, so there is a kind of a possibility of failure. There is this kiss, don't kiss, it doesn't make sense or not. And then, after you melt the ice, you just... go with the flow. So this scene kind of takes me to the third big category that is most game specific, definitely, and probably more worth analysis, in my opinion. And it's when sex is interacting, essentially. I don't know if sex is mechanic is a good label, but when you're actually playing and this sexual intercourse is integrated in the gameplay. And when this happens, some issues arise. And I'm not talking about moral issues or issues of decency, who cares, but about how sexuality is represented through this computational medium. If you think about it, like, we use the catchphrase, the medium is the message, to talk about how certain properties of certain media affect the content itself. And you know, in film and video based porn, you have you know, like the presence of a camera actually informs, affects the mechanics and the logistics of the sexual intercourse. Certain positions are privileged because they just work well on screen, right? The scene is always well lit, you know, things like that. And then like external ejaculation is definitely more common because, you know, it's more spectacular. You can see it. It can be on camera. So what about video games? Video games have probably like similar issues, different because they are different, like a different medium. For instance, gaming worlds are kind of constructed. They are designed around the worlds. Pretty much everything in a gaming world, a well-designed game, is supposed to be functional or detrimental to the success of the player. So it's not a real surprise that no reproductive sex is always kind of struggle to find a role, find a place in these functionalist worlds, because it's kind of like a useless activity. It's supposed to be an end by itself. And in that's terrible. And it's when stuff is finalized to reproduction, like where is the place? So in GTA San Andreas, this is the controversial hot topic, hot coffee, sorry, mod, which was basically a hidden scene, interactive sex scene, was hidden by the developers, and then some users discovered it and found a way to unlock it. But it's a Easter egg. It's not really necessary because you don't really need romance to be a successful gangster, I guess. Yeah. And the mechanic is a sort of super simple rhythm game, which is that's how game designers tend to implement sex. It's kind of like the closest mechanic that we can imagine associated to that. But yeah, but again, there's something hidden in the more recent episodes of GTA, like this is GTA 4, sex is a little bit more integrated in the overall gameplay, although it's not like represented in such a graphic kind of explicit way. It's quite explicit actually, but not up close. You can only have sex in cars, which makes totally sense in a game called Grand Theft Auto. So having sex actually affects the statistics, the features of your character. It basically gives you energy, kind of like a sandwich. Formally speaking, it's kind of like a money versus energy transaction, because you can go, yeah, you have a choice. You can go with prostitutes, and that's way less labor intensive. But you can also have, you know, a real girlfriend, and that will take some more work because, you know, you have to take her out and stuff and such. So you have this, but it's still like, you know, within the functionalist thing, it's not core necessary for, but it's kind of like a side quest. So another issue that is definitely like related to those previous ones is the issue of quantities. You know, in computational media, everything is expressed by numeric value, or at least like under the surface, that may mathematical formulas and so on. So there is a kind of natural bias toward representing things that can be quantified. So you can do sexy things with numbers, some people might argue, but when you translate a kind of like a continuous, unmeasurable event into basically what our reality is made of, into kind of like a set of measurable quantities, you are kind of adopting a reductionist process. So GTA Hot Coffee, this music is terrible. In GTA Hot Coffee, you have an excitement bar. In Indigo Prophecy, also known as Fahrenheit, you have sort of like numbers that are popping around telling you like, hey, you have plus 10 in relationship with this person, like there, things like that. So there's a very like a very clear representation of what happens underneath the narrative surface. And you are the guy as always. And there is one of the earliest actually interactive sex scenes, even though I think the North American version had the girl's nipples removed. like, because it was too much, I guess. But yeah, but then here, as you can see, I don't know if you can see the interface up there, you kind of have to press, it's another kind of random game. The complexity of these two intimate bodies is basically abstracted into basically one variable, it's kind of like a penetration variable, essentially. And so like it, instead of like a two-way flow of information, you kind of had this broken feedback loop, a feedback loop, and there is essentially one way to have like one proper way to fuck. So back in like this is somewhat related to something I did back in 2003 when I started making games. I was very interested in exploring what I used to call the awkward role playing. So basically forcing the players into kind of disempowered roles, kind of reversing the tendency of games to, you know, put you in a position of power. Games, you know, are often power fantasies, and so you are like a big general or a gangster or something, or was it or an orc or something. So I was kind of like enjoying putting my players into terrible roles. Such a, in this case, it's kind of tame, actually. To me, like, this idea of putting a player in a disempowered role was a way to kind of hopefully push them to reflect on the kind of the power relationship that happened in the real world. So basically, this one is called Orgasm Simulator, which is kind of like a pun in Italian, because we don't say fake orgasms. Faking orgasm, we say simulate orgasms. I always thought it was weird, so I made a game about it. And then here, like, the quantification and the reductionism is used in a kind of ironic way. So the orgasm simulator is basically this little device that is supposedly teaching young girls how to fake orgasms in order to make their boyfriends happy. And again, it's also a kind of reading game. And you are this kind of unfortunate lady, like you are in first person, unfortunate lady with a kind of like a macho boyfriend, kind of like mechanically humping you, and you are basically have one button and you're trying to match your nose to your boyfriend nose. So you're like trying to feel like what part are you exactly, and then you're trying to press and hold, and the more you hold and you press and release, the more you hold, the higher is the sound you make. And then at the end you have to, you know, just to simulate a big you know, fireworks kind of thing. So to me, this was like also considering how most games are, you know, like are kind of male oriented, especially at that point. There were many like games for girls. To me, like kind of reversing the perspective was kind of interesting. Anyway, this issue of quantification is probably way more central. It's kind of like rampant in this other game that is called it's Playboy Dimension. It's kind of like a simulator of what's his name, Hugh Hefner, the manager of Playboy magazine. And yeah, you have a lot of variables. So as you can see, it's a simulation game. So you have bars and numbers and stuff, and like stats that go up and down. It's basically a crossover between a business simulation and a kind of life simulation game like The Sims. And you have to manage Playboy magazine essentially. And I haven't played it too much, but you do so mostly by throwing parties and keeping good relationship with pinups and establishing connections with writers and so on. And I think it's quite ambitious, actually. It's an ambitious title because it tries to simulate a business centered on relationship. I think it's kind of fascinating. Like Playboy Dimension is probably the only business the only game who tries to simulate kind of like a typical knowledge capitalism kind of situation in which you have friendships effects. There's also a sex scene that is not entertaining, but yeah. You have friendship, effects, reputation, all this kind of like soft and material things that are all subsumed under the capital, as we said. You know, quantified exchange, and as we Marxists like to say, they are put to work. I don't mean to blame exclusively designers for all these issues that I see, because they have to deal with the medium that is already there, and computers like old media are not infinitely malleable. They have a history, and a history is crystallized in their DNA into some extent. The first computing machines, like that's an analog computer, kind of like the earliest analog computer, was used to drop bombs in Korea, or maybe even World War II. They were kind of invented to calculate trajectories. And to me, it kind of explains why the history of computer games is mostly a history of ballistics. That's the first, recognizes the first game, which you have a space war. It's also made out of a World War II radar screen, because they didn't have screens, computer screens at that point. But yeah, it's kind of like asteroids, sort of meteors kind of game. You have spaceships that are trying to hit each other with rockets. It's not, like, if you think about it, it's not even that different from most of the contemporary games, in which you have bodies in space and they are trying to kind of like get the best position to shoot at each other. So it's kind of like a history of Newtonian materialism, and a history of bodies, physical bodies, rigid bodies clashing together. And to me, it also explains why there are still some kind of like serious technical limits in the representation of round soft bodies. It's kind of like a major, to me, it's a major aspect of the uncanny valley. It's this promise of... There's even a cat there. It's a promise of realism that is not delivered. And I don't know, I think we created this technology, these amazing technologies that make the simulation of a grenade launcher way easier than the simulation of a caress, for example. Oh, another technological problem that I really sort of touched upon is the problem of interfaces. So in design, we say that reality has infinite affordances. It's like saying there are infinite ways to, for example, grab a cock. But in human-computer interaction, the interaction happens through more like constrained, very limited protocols, for example, your game controller. This is kind of like the misery of quick-time action that I was describing in Heavy Rain, that happens also in this other, game called God of War. I don't remember which character, but you also have press this button here and press this button now, accompanied by terrible sounds like string, it's over the top humor, but to me it kind of shows how standard game controllers are designed to perform simple spatial movements and kind of instantaneous actions. So you have to be very literal when you want to convey, that was weird. But you have to be very literal when you have situations that are not codified in the gaming language, like having sex with 12 girls, or anywhere there. Press a button here and press a button there. So that's kind of like humorous spine. There are other examples that are also kind of showing the limit. So Seven Seas have this kind of like a swinger game that has this mini game, kind of imaginative. So this is kind of like the gamification of the male gaze. Like you're getting points to like focus on the boobs. It's also kind of humorous, but this one is kind of like the best and the worst. The mapping the female body on double analog controllers. But yeah, it kind of shows the limits of game controllers when, you know, applied to intimacy, to apply to this kind of interaction. This is Seven Scenes. It's like a German life simulation dating game, kind of, with some story. Kind of, we're going kind of underground here. So the last category that I have to mention probably pertains mostly with the use of the product itself. I'm basically talking about games as jerk-off material, as opposed to the ones you saw before, because they are like they are games for entertainment properly. So here in this game, sex is not inscribed in a gameplay; it's not part of a story. Not necessarily. It's more like what we call Paideia, which is a non-competitive game. It's kind of like a free-form, sandboxy kind of game. It's like child's play, if you will. And it's not part of the story because the representation of sex is the whole point of the system, the whole point of the product. So the most sophisticated example is this kind of obscure series called Sex Villa. They are all made by different variation, but they're all made by the same company. It's kind of like kind of what you see. You have the sandbox for fantasies. But the thing is, if video and film porn revolves around contemplation and identification. Interactive pornography seems to be shifting the focus toward control, that's cybernetic specifically, control and customization of your situation. You're removing goals, and so you also remove the negotiation with some other entity, some partner, either real or virtual. So you're also removing the climatic action in this case, and in fact, you have these non-player control characters that are basically unable to reach the orgasm. They are kind of like expressing the same degree of satisfaction to some extent. They're kind of like perpetual fucking machines, fucking other fucking machines. They just like go on forever because the point is that they're giving you time to do whatever you want off the screen. Another thing is, virtual porn of this kind heavily relies on customization. So it's a stage, to enact your fantasies. And in 3D Sex Villa, the level of customization, at least the most recent version, is crazy. Like, you have 12 variables only for the eye makeup. Strangely or not, the range of possible outputs are kind of still extremely normative. Like, you can do really male and male. You have to look for a mod or something. You can't grow a penis on a vagina, on a woman, things like that, on a female body. Women tend to be always femme. There's no way to tweak them beyond the norm, I guess, the normative standard of beauty. And this other one, the only variable you can tweak real time is the size, the boob size. And obviously you have this thing that computer graphic itself is normative because it proposes unattainable models of beauty. Like, if we if we always rightly bitch about Photoshop in fashion magazines, if that's the tendency, if they switch to a more increasingly more virtualized models, that's going to be even a bigger problem because at that point they are just simulacra. They don't have any real reference anymore. They are impossible bodies. And to me, this thing is such a missed opportunity because we have this medium that is so flexible, like could really push the boundaries of what is imaginable, what is fuckable, essentially. And we are using it, and they are using it to constrain, within the rigid constraint of mainstream pornography. And even with the family-friendly evolution against sports, allows you to produce more interesting results. This is a game for children, essentially, but it allows you to customize your creatures, and you can tweak them in a pretty deep way, and you can come up with like really interesting and weird and charming and cute stuff. This creature might not be sexy, might not be jerk-off material, but it's just a demonstration of the variety that you can achieve in a computational virtual environment. Anyway, so this is another game that I made in 2004 that sort of plays with this idea, or at least like tries to explore this idea. It's also dealing with exploring the limits of role-playing in games and the limits of identification and stuff. Like at that point, I was interested in Judith Butler's queer theory, and I was like, oh damn, these ideas are so great and so relatively simple and so necessary right now, and yet gender studies are so, like, the literature is so inaccessible and so self-referential and will never become popular. So it was like, oh, let's try to make a little game inspired by it. So Queer Power is this kind of like a reversal fighting game. At the beginning, it's set in this future, not in a future, but kind of like a distant planet in which people don't have fixed gender roles, and so they kind of like fornicate, and we can kind of make love according to their pleasure, and they don't have really genders. Even though at the beginning, for formal reasons, you can express a general preference for certain genitals, they're not that different from us. The game itself is a reversal of a fighting game like Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, except instead of fighting, you're having like this weird intercourse that is kind of not exactly violent, but it's a little, intense, let's say that. And instead of stereotypical, characters in these kind of games are always like very sexualized because they are appealing to, teenagers, and stuff, and they are also very like stereotypically ethnicized because they are fighters from all around the world, and so you have like the worst things ever. So I was like, this genre is the worst thing, period. And I'm gonna make a game about like reversing this. So the game like looks like this. You have this silhouette that are kind of shape shifting. So instead of spatial moves, you have a certain position and certain like body conformation. You don't really switch gender, but you mostly switch the kind of the interface between the two. So instead of having a damage bar, you have a pleasure bar. So instead of sucking away energy, you are providing, you're giving pleasure to the other and to yourself as well. So the amount of pleasure you get depends on your initial preference and your current sort of status of the other player. So you have a kind of like a desire bar here that might be variable according to the respective state. So playing this game kind of entails constant negotiation between what your character likes and the other identity, like the other sort of player's identity, and what the other player likes. And so there is a conclusion, which is not exactly a goal, but the game ends when one of the player or both players reach an orgasm. But it's not really formalized in the sense that's the goal. Players can essentially compete in different ways, can decide, oh well, let's play for let's see who comes first, or let's see who lasts longer, or the most interesting one is when players try to reach the orgasm at the same time, which is possible. Anyway, pushing the limits of roleplay to me is one of the possibilities and one of the many things that video games can do, but it's not just that. I think there are a few video games, for example, that function as social interfaces for people in proximity. Like, there are virtual role-playing games that are essential technology of separation, or at least they are based and founded on the idea that you have very distant people, and so the game can be like the exclusive negotiation between these two people. But I think there are other possibilities. For example, this one, This is Fingles, a two-player iPad game, came out recently, made by a small Dutch studio called Game Oven. I don't know if you played it, somebody knows it. But yeah, it's a kind of like a loosely sexualized twister for your fingers. You kind of have to, you know, to follow those little simple shapes, and you play, you know, with your girlfriend or with a stranger. And you play local, you know, there's a little bit of contact, there's a little bit of physical interaction. And I think that can be, even if, you know, it's very simple, but can be a step in a new direction, a new category that is not there yet in my taxonomy. It's like, why can't game be initiator of rapport, initiator of contact between, you know, real bodies, real people? Why can't they be part of a date or even like a foreplay? To me, like in the same way that I don't know, you invite people over to dinner or you go watch some, you know, like a romantic movie, why can't game have the same function? To me, instead of awkwardly surrogating a sexual partner, games can be social interfaces in this sense between real people, like Yako said yesterday, an alibi for doing things that you wouldn't otherwise do. Video games can do as well, not just large, I think. They can be sandboxes to, you know, experiment with desire, to, you know, play doctor on another level, maybe. And we just have to design them. And that's pretty much all I have to say. You can see these two games and many others on this website, malinvestor.org. And if you have any questions, I'm open to it. Oh. It's impossible. I missed it. All right, let me try again. It's such a clever joke about the most common misspelling of the website. Well, all right.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So you learned yesterday that we should have something like a microphone stand here.
Oh yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Questions. So to establish the rule here, if you have a question for our speakers, please come up here and use this microphone here because we are recording all of that stuff.
Okay, so please come in. Yeah.
Hi, I thought that was really great, but I'm really interested in some of the ways that sexual identity manifests in Second Life. And I was curious, like, how you made the decision to exclude Second Life from your talk and, like, what the criteria were, because certainly in terms of the sex and identity aspects, it's something you probably looked at a lot, but it's not a game in the same way that some of the other games you're describing are. So I just thought maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I actually was an early user of Second Life before it was cool. I've been pegged by a furry, but to me it's kind of important to make a distinction. To me, there's a lot of literature, a lot of like discourse around Second Life as a virtual space. Not a lot about that thing, properly games as games, but games as the things that look like games. So to me, when you have multiple people, you know, with no goal, it becomes something else. It's a sandbox, it's a space for sociality, and so, yeah, it's closer to, I don't know, closer to a telephone to some extent rather than a game, you know what I mean?
I guess my thought was that. I guess my thought was that people engage in so much play in Second Life that while it's not directed as past like a traditional game is, there's an incredible amount of playing, and being in Second Life for a certain section of people is really about play, where they can like throw penises at each other and, you know, totally manifest. So a lot of the things we're talking about are flexibility, strike me as Second Life as being very gameable. right?
Yeah, that's true. I think some of the issues that are directed to me are the ones that are deeply rooted in the kind of a procedural, like silicon matter. They are still in Second Life. You know, you also have this you know, scripts that are like, and then they go on forever. And I don't know if it might be interesting or not. It might be a limitation. I don't know if I answered really.
A comment and a question. I think from, you know, you commented on the you know, games are so much about trajectory and simple physics and whatnot, and that's partly simply what we're able to do with computing easily is, you know, a few differential equations, full calculus or something, you can do trajectory. Meaningful human and meaningful simulation of kind of very flexible bodies and just difficult meaningful simulation of flexible personality and cognitive activity being harder. So I guess the question is, we're getting better at these things. Obviously, movie studios are putting billions of dollars into better computer graphics. There's people working on sort of better AI and simulation of personality. Do you think that actually will be desirable if we can do that better as opposed to, you know, something like the Fingal thing, which is very much about mediating communication between real people who don't have to be simulated? Is it actually desirable if we have better simulations of people, or do we really just not want to go there?
I can see space for improvement in so many ways, in so many directions that I don't think they are mutually exclusive. It's like while defining kind of the design issues in representing or simulating sex in large, you know, yesterday there was like a great, you know, overview of all the possible design solutions, and some of them are like specific design, some are related to what you really need to do within the limit of the, you know, the magic circle. And I think also like in games you have different directions that to me are still unexplored essentially. My provocation with that trajectories and stuff is, and I know it's kind of bullshit, but my provocation is, to me, we have these technologies because the technologies are related to, you know, to a bigger social context and a social use. And so it's like, if we didn't have a war, maybe, you know, if we didn't have to, you know, bomb people, maybe we will have a already better technology for simulating soft bodies. Take that. Think about it. Yeah, I know, it's a speculation. Yeah.
Thinking about that, the learned social behavior, what happens to us, to society, to culture, as we go from observing sex in pornography or in romantic comedy to kind of participatory play learning of that social sexual behavior?
Yeah, you know, to me, it's, I don't know. Answer. I have no idea. Like the assumption is, oh, maybe these things will become more popular. But right now, they are not. Seriously. Like actually, I think made most of like this research or started like getting into this kind of weird obscure games a few years ago with the idea that maybe this can be the next big thing in pornography. It didn't happen yet, and maybe it will not even happen. It will be just one of the subgenre. You know, you like certain. You know, like. Model train fetish, and this will be kind of like similar to that, you know. It's entirely possible. But what if this becomes a more like a kind of diffused, even if hidden thing like pornography? It makes sense. Like it makes sense for many different reasons. Like you know, you have all you know. I think I keep hearing that the porn industry is sort of struggling with the higher bar that is imposed by high definition videos. You know, like that's something I keep hearing about. And you know, if you have virtual models, that's kind of easy. And you don't have this problem anymore. You just have to, you know, scale your models and add some polygons. So I don't know. I can see it happening, also because you know the kids who are growing up with you know, interacting with screens, these babies that are like at 1 year old or basically already touching screens. They might not be that excited by, you know, just watching pornography like our generation or the previous generation were. So how does it affect me? It's normative, but normative in a different way. Like instead of being like, you know, kind of like, I guess, proposing certain behavior in bed as kind of like the standard or the best practices, it will probably propose other different, kind of like a different set of things.
Final question?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for this talk. I really enjoyed like all the different conceptual categories that you offered for thinking about the brain effectively. I'm still interested in the concept of the interface, and I think it's interesting how the final piece that you brought up was almost kind of about bringing the interface to the physical body, or the using the interface to engage the physical body in different ways. And I think there's probably some like you talked a little bit about non-electronic games, and I think in terms of board games, there's like a lot of other, because the interface comes packaged with the game, and it can be almost anything. You know, you can think of something like Pretty Pretty Princess, where the point is to like put on costumes in a sequence. You know, there could be an erotic version of Pretty Pretty Princess, you know, with sex toys and fetish gear. You know, something like that. I think it's interesting. I guess I wondered if you could say a little bit more about the proliferation of the interface and
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've seen like an example I won't show because it was terrible and it wasn't really working for my argument. is this game that employs Wii controllers and you know, there's like it's all like party games, very like swingy and kind of like steamy, supposedly party games in which you end up kind of like kissing a Wii controller with somebody else. You know, like I had to find a video about it. So that's kind of like the interface that becomes almost like you know, kind of like a toy and kind of gets in the way of actual contact to me. So, Wii Dare. All right, Google it. Even our version, it got viral for a while because people were like, "What the?" Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. I think there is an interesting tendency, or I don't know if it's a tendency, but there are definitely like a few people who are figuring out things like a thing, or especially in the Scandinavian and the Nordic scene that we discovered and how awesome it is. It's awesome video games, and we are kind of like trying to break some kind of like assumption, in our specifically cybernetic assumption regarding games, computer games, and basically inject some of the experience, some of the kind of the wealth that is coming from folk games that are, you know, like kind of like, all right, what can computer do in combination with this? Things we have in popular folk games. So I don't know, like I'm not the best person to ask this question because I still do like screen-based stuff, but I have big hopes for things like that.
Okay.
All right.